Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yulia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future. Hi guys, welcome to episode number 10 of the Future Thinkers Podcast. Today in the show, we have a guest that a lot of you might recognize. His name is Nikola Danilov.
So Nikola runs one of the more popular Singularity podcasts on the internet right now. He's interviewed almost everybody in the Singularity space that matters, that you can possibly think of, from Peter Diamandis to Kurzweil to pretty much everybody who's talking about Singularity, longevity, robotics, artificial intelligence. So we asked a ton of questions about all of these topics, and so here's the interview. It's a bit longer than usual, but hope you like it. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's really great to have you.
It's my pleasure, guys. I haven't been on a podcast with two hosts at the same time so far, so it will be interesting for me too.
So you've interviewed a lot of people about the singularity, the future, robots, AI, nanotechnology. I'm curious as what your vision for the future is, and what do you think the biggest obstacles are going to be to get in the way of your version or your what most excites you about the future?
There's two things that stand out for me after doing probably about 150 episodes with some of the, quote, smartest people around the world. First, the experts are all over the map. There's hardly agreement on anything. For example, some people say the singularity would be the best thing that could happen for humanity. Other people would say that it will be the end of the world. And each of those groups are equally smart and equally brilliant people. And that's generally the whole opinion spread or the whole spectrum on our views of humanity's future. Whether it will be the end or it will be the beginning or whether it be somewhere in between. I personally, what I've learned from that myself is that, in my opinion, as far as I can tell, the future is wide open. And that means to say that it could go either way. I would say that what will make the difference is humanity. So that's the good news. For me, the good news is that anything is possible, despite the fact that there are all those experts who say that the future will inevitably be this and inevitably be that. I don't think that there's anything inevitable about our future. I think it's absolutely wide open. And I think that basically, we can be in charge. If we're not in charge now, we can be in charge. We can steer it in the right direction, and we can bring it towards the betterment of humanity rather than the end of it. And this is actually kind of where I see my own function or my own purpose of my Singularity One-on-One podcast, which is to say, to start the conversation, to bring light to all those opinions and possibilities. And hopefully, in turn, that will create the motivation, the awareness, and start the process of learning how to steer towards a better outcome rather than the worst one.
That's really great. I really like that outlook. It kind of gives the power to the people who are, you know, listening to your podcast and just people who are out there trying to think, oh, well, am I actually going to play any kind of a role in the future? And I agree with you. I think we're all going to play a role, and we can definitely, you know, take steps to make the future the way that we want it to be.
Yeah, we shouldn't be spectators in our own future. That's the whole point of my podcast and basically everything that I've been doing for the past 5 years. We should rather get up and be active participants. And if we do that in an intelligent and educated way, you know, I think we have pretty good chances. Of course, the outcome is never guaranteed, but it's always better if you are proactive rather than passive.
What kind of things do you think we can do to sort of influence on the positive side?
There's a number of things. So the first thing is to get off our butts. The second thing is to embrace the scientific method. To stop arguing about stuff that can be proven scientifically. And the third is to bring in what I think is the most, or one of the most important elements anyway, and that's ethics. If we have the proactive element of us actually actively partaking into, one, the discussion, and then the actions necessary to steer our future, and we do that while studying and implementing the principles of science, as well as a very serious ethical consideration of the potential outcomes in ethical terms, because that's the place where science is incomplete, and that's to say ethics. In other words, science allows us to accomplish all kinds of outcomes without necessarily giving us the tools or the awareness of whether those outcomes will be better or worse for us. And this is where ethics is so important, I believe. And that's why, for example, there's a common misunderstanding that my show and my podcast or my blog, Singularity Web Blog, is a technology blog. That's not exactly accurate. What's more accurate is to say that my blog is a blog about ethics and technology is just a context. Because you see, for me personally, while all those details are very interesting about this or that incredible technology, such as, for example, 3D printing, nanotech, artificial intelligence, genetics, synthetic biology, those are all absolutely fascinating topics. But the bigger question is always, so what? If we forget that, we are always likely to have a problem in the end of the day. We should never stop at just aiming at a certain outcome. But we should continue and investigate whether that outcome would be a positive thing in itself or not. The so what question is a question we should never forget.
Do you think there's a problem, or do you think we kind of run into a problem in that gray territory when business people start to look at science and they see opportunities to capitalize and make businesses out of the advances that scientists are making?
Well, look, business people are no different than scientists or other people. You know, they have their own motivations, which are clear in terms of profit generating and, you know, economic advancement. But that doesn't mean that they necessarily do not or cannot care about ethics and outcomes. In fact, I've met many business people who have taken considerable effort to consider and to implement the best possible outcome, not only economically, but also ethically, on occasions, even if that has costed them in economic terms. And that's why I think, while that's not the predominant modus operandi of the business community, I think it could be, especially when we're talking about super powerful technology that has never existed before. Why not? Why don't we take into consideration also the ethical implications of our business actions or transactions? And I think, for example, one such example which gives me hope is how a number of the business community have embraced global warming and have decided to take actions so that their businesses are either zero footprint or even positive footprint overall when it comes to their global environmental impact. That's only one example, but there are many others.
I'm curious to know what you're most excited about with the future. What technologies or what entrepreneurs or scientists are working on projects that excite you the most?
Well, okay, let me give you a couple of examples. So one thing that's very exciting is, for example, life extension technology. And the reason for that is twofold. And that's, if we are able to have longer lives, I believe we would be able to not only cut down on suffering, but we would actually be able to make a bigger impact. Because there are so many amazing people. I mean, generally, professionals and experts reach their peak around 55 or 60 years of age. And that's exactly the time when you start seriously deteriorating health-wise. Or mentally, which is even worse. And then all those people who took decades to be trained basically are taken out of circulation by the time they're 65 or 70. Having healthy life extension could change that equation. So that's one example where I'm very excited. Another thing that excites me the most is solar power. Solar power is coming to parity globally. There's actually a number of places in the world where solar power production is on par with fossil fuel production in terms of the cost. Now, that's super exciting to me because if you are able to have access to abundant, unlimited solar power at or better prices than fossil fuels, and I believe within the decade, within a decade, we will be able to have much better prices for solar than anything else, then you can open up so many other opportunities. So, for example, if you resolve the issue with energy, then you can resolve the issue with fresh water, because we are living on a blue planet, and provided that your energy is near free or it has zero marginal cost, then it will not be such a big deal to convert a lot of the or sufficiently large amounts of salt water to desalinate it and to convert it into fresh water. And that in turn can take care of many other issues such as desertification, food production, access to clean and fresh water. Those in turn would take care of, let's say, malnutrition, will take care of the spread of infectious disease, because if you have access to clean, fresh water, then you're less likely to go, you know, first of all, to travel for miles to get access to dirty or polluted water, which then has all kinds of detrimental health effects. And so, in other words, energy is one of those issues which, if you resolve it, then you have basically a chain reaction of positive loopback, which will help us resolve malnutrition, the spread of infectious disease. If you can do that, then you extend healthy lifespans. Then people would have more money to send their kids to education. All kinds of positive benefits, right? So that's another thing that makes me super excited.
It's amazing how some of these technologies can just snowball and cause such a huge wave of different effects. But I actually want to circle back to what you said about the life extension technologies, because we just listened to your recent episode with Bill Andrews that you had. I was actually kind of amazed how little in terms of cost it would cost for him to test some of these life extension technologies and how much they're struggling to come up with funding for this. And you would think that there would be a lot more interest from angel investors or, you know, philanthropist billionaires to invest in this kind of technology, because we see billions of dollars getting dumped into things like WhatsApp and Tumblr and all these companies that are still pre-profit. You know, they're not even making a profit and they're getting such a huge investment. So I'm wondering what people can do and what scientists also can do to attract the attention of people who would definitely be interested in investing in them. Do you think it's kind of like a communication problem, like they're not able to communicate?
Absolutely. And again, this is where my podcast and your podcast and other people's podcasts or blogs or function can come about. That is to say, to educate the public, because, you know, the business community is a part of the general community. And they suffer from the same ignorance or blind spots that the rest of humanity suffers from. And so the function of science is basically to make progress, to change the way things used to be for the betterment of humanity. But in order for this to happen, first people have to actually have or to embrace the belief that it's possible in the first place, or the hope. And this is where education is so vitally important, right? This is where bringing light to some of the research, to some of the positive outcomes, let's say when it comes to healthy life extension, be it examples of the so-called Methuselah fruit flies or tests done 2 or 3 years ago with extending the telomeres of mice in Harvard University. All those things, you know, the public has to be aware of. And then they would slowly, over time, being exposed to that idea that we can actually do something about this, that we can actually change this. You know, just like, for example, the myth of Icarus and Daedalus was about 2,500 years old myth, if not 3,000 years old. People always thought flight is impossible. It's an impossible dream that humanity has had forever, but it will never be accomplished. Well, it's been now, 110 years or so since the Wright brothers proved us wrong. But before they were able to do that, they had to believe that that's possible to be done in the first place. So this is where open mind, or what Buddhists call having a beginner's mind, is very important. And the awareness that, in fact, all knowledge is kind of provisional, given the best information that we have so far. And if that information changes, then the realm of possibility would also change, and the sort of the context or the essence of that knowledge would also change. And that's why I think we can play a fairly important role in that process. You know, I'm not a scientist myself, but I've been fortunate enough to speak to some of the best scientists around the world, and many of their amazing ideas do not get enough exposure as they should. And Bill Andrews is a perfect example of that. I mean, he only needs about $40 million to make a human cell or to do the research necessary, which gives them lots of hope to believe that they can make a human cell immortal. Now, what's $40 million for that, right? One F-35 is like $120 to $150 million, right? And people have mentions that are, you know, a couple of times more expensive than $40 million, and government wastes billions of dollars on all kinds of stupid stuff. $40 million in the context of things is not that much, right? But what's lacking is a concerted, deliberate effort. And I mean, part of it is the fact that for many thousands of years, people promising life or what life extension or what used to be referred to as the philosopher's stone in the age of the alchemists were basically snake oil salesmen. And so we have this very long ingrained resistance to the idea. And that's fine. Skepticism is a very healthy point to begin with. But once science enters into the realm, we can learn and we can build upon knowledge. One of the problems with the alchemists is that everything that they did was done in secret. And so everybody had to discover the hard way that mercury is poisonous. And if one person died, nobody ever found out about it. So then the next alchemist had to try mercury to live forever, and then he ended the same way as the previous guy because there was no sharing of information. That's why information is so important, and not only positive information, but negative information. So when you fail in an experiment, it's also very important to share that failure so that others don't waste their time trying the same experiment, but move to other more productive alternatives.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of younger listeners who are aware of what some of the changes are that are happening now and where they could be going in the future, but they don't really know how to contribute to them. And Yuvi and I are aware that you've completed the program at the Singularity University. And I'm curious about what your experience has been there and what you studied and what you got out of that program.
Well, so first of all, let me just say for the young people out there, they can make an impact more than it's ever been possible before in the history of the world. Simply because we have the blessing of living in a world where it doesn't matter where you live in India or in Nepal or, I don't know, in Africa somewhere, you have access to the latest information, the latest research, and you can put stuff out there for the rest of the world to see. And you can engage those ideas and you can work on them. So first of all, we're starting from a position of power here, like unlimited power. That's what technology basically provides us, leverage. Secondly, the opportunities to become a scientist or to become an entrepreneur, I think, are much greater than ever before. That pertains pretty much to the fact that, again, access to information, we can access for free all the best courses from the best universities, the best business schools, the best science courses in the world. And there are some exceptions, like, for example, I don't know, if you want to be a neurosurgeon or something like that. But in most cases, let's say 90% of the time, I would say that you don't necessarily need a diploma to be able to do something. As long as you have acquired the knowledge and you have the skill, and it doesn't matter how you got there, you can do that on your own nowadays, then you can be successful in that field and in that realm. It used to be the case that diplomas were so important. I chased diplomas for about 7 or 8 years of my life, have a bunch of them, but really in the end of the day, they sit here on my wall and collect dust. It's not what you know, it's about what you do in life that makes the difference. And so I want to say, Singularity University is the most amazing place I have been to. But don't take it as a make or break option for your life. Don't say, well, I didn't get accepted to Singularity University and therefore I cannot make an impact on the world. The reality is you can get accepted to Singularity University and that's still not a guarantee that you will make an impact on the world. what matters is your determination and your desire to make a difference. And that cannot be given to you by a person or an institution. It can only be earned. The main point here is don't consider Singularity University as a must for doing something with your life. Now, having said that, my time personally at Singularity University was pretty much some of the most incredible time that I've had in my life, because it's very unique in the sense that it is located in Mountain View, California, on NASA's Ames campus. You get unique, very privileged access to some of the smartest people around the world, the biggest corporations, the most pioneering visionaries in a number of fields. And that kind of environment can act both as an inspiration and an enormous education in a very short time, and also as a networking sort of environment where you get to meet all those kinds of people, and when you bring your own ideas along with you, of course, then they may actually notice something in yourself, and then good things can happen. Singularity University is a fantastic place to visit, and it would probably accelerate your idea or your ability to make a positive impact on the world for a number of reasons, due to the knowledge that you will gain in a very short period of time, the people that you're going to be exposed to and meet, the friendships you're going to develop there. So all those things are very important, but you can get those things in other ways. In other words, online, and it will take you longer time, but it is still doable as long as you have the motivation to do it. So go try and apply for Singularity University. Chances are it would be the best place you've ever been to, and it would absolutely change your life and the way you perceive the world and what is not possible. But if you don't get accepted, don't think too much about it and just move on and change the world anyway.
Have you heard the concept of a digital nomad?
Yeah.
So it's interesting when I hear talk about the loss of jobs due to automation, because on our side, we're just seeing the world as a world of abundance, because everything is, there's just opportunity everywhere when you take it from the entrepreneur's side.
Yeah, I wonder what you think about, like, you know, young people, for example, growing up somewhere with that idea that you have to go to university, you have to get a degree, then you get a job. And then there's this, the reality is that a degree doesn't necessarily give you a job, and that a job might not even be something important or not something that matters to you. I mean, in terms of like what you're doing at that job. What do you think about that sort of new life path of more and more people going into entrepreneurship, more and more people skipping university and just educating themselves on their own and acquiring those skills that they need to have?
Yeah, I mean, I have the highest respect for entrepreneurship. My wife has, until recently, she had two businesses and one not-for-profit. So after 2 years, now finally she stepped down from the not-for-profit so she can actually scale down on her time commitments. I have one of my own, which has been the blog and the podcast. So, and again, going to what I said previously, education used to be necessary. And I mean, formal education and diplomas, such qualifications used to be necessary. Right now, they're not anymore. And the way actually education works right now, and it has been working for the past couple of hundred years, is that basically education was created uniformly disciplined workers for the post-industrial revolution kind of period, where you had mass production, and in order to be able to sustain that mass production, you needed a mass-trained workforce with sort of uniform qualifications, which were required to fill in those mass available job opportunities. Well, that's not the age we live in anymore. Right now, we're going towards more customization. We're going towards the long tail of jobs, which is to say endless niches of opportunities. The world is changing so fast that by the time people graduate from school, the job market and the job opportunities are very different from the time they've actually entered. I mean, 5 years is a long time nowadays. So again, unless you are a doctor or a couple of other very specific professions, I would not say that formal education would be the best way to go. So that's number one. There are the benefits of education, such as, for example, networking, and most of all, learning how to learn. So as long as we have that kind of explicit awareness that the most important part of learning is learning how to learn, how to do your research, how to sort of distinguish and differentiate between good science and bad science, good outcomes and bad outcomes, you know, in that sense, education can be very helpful. But again, I believe you can acquire that not necessarily in formal institutions, so they're not a must. Now, having said that, I am kind of half and half on the sort of the possibility realm that we're facing, in the sense that, yes, as I said, we have better access to make a difference in the world than ever before. But the reality is the vast majority of humanity is kind of hijacked by survival, trying to make to survive, to make do with the very scant resources that they have access to every day, and just to eke a living and to survive. So technological unemployment can be a very worrisome, and for me personally is a very worrisome prospect too, because given the right negative environment, it can create such an explosive situations between the haves and the have-nots that usually, historically speaking, ends up in revolutions. If that were to happen, then I'm afraid that basically it can end up destroying everything that we have accomplished for so many years. That's why that transitional process is a very tricky one. And also it again comes back down to education, because the changes in our society, in our economic system, in our abilities to find work, to make a difference, to make a living, to make profit, to create businesses, are going so fast that, and the mindset that we have developed has such a strong inertia and momentum that it's always lagging behind the reality that we live in, at least for the vast majority of the population. And if a sufficiently large part of the population find itself unable to survive and prosper in this general system of ours due to, let's say, technological unemployment, we know for a fact that unemployed people, especially unemployed young people, are, for example, most likely to succumb to the ideology of extremism and terrorism. If you lack a purpose or a meaning in your life, then you may embrace extreme religion, you may embrace sort of a violent ideology, or you can just simply become a criminal. That's why education, being able to demonstrate the variety of opportunities that we have in front of us, and also combined with a number of other programs such as, for example, even government support in some cases, I think is kind of like the half and half way, or the best way to ease the transition from the current society where we have very strong centralized educational institutions and very kind of strong centralized employers which hire, let's say, the vast majority of the population, because the vast majority of the population right now is non-entrepreneurial. They basically do their 9-to-5 jobs. And that transition from kind of an employee to an entrepreneur takes a long time, courage, and education. And I'm afraid that if we get it right, it can change the world for the better. But if we don't get it right, it can lead to violence, to you know, bloody revolutions, and it can destroy everything.
So what do you think people who have already made the jump can do for everybody else, other than just trying to inspire and show people that it's possible? You know, because I think now we're seeing more and more entrepreneurs of necessity. What can people who are already entrepreneurial teach people who aren't yet entrepreneurial to show them that it's possible?
Well, number one thing is to change our cultural attitudes towards failure. Right. If there's one amazing thing, that one lesson that you learn in Silicon Valley and in Singularity University, is that failure is inevitable and that you have to embrace it. It's part of the learning process. There can be no learning unless there is failure. You'll never get things right from the first, second, fourth, fifth, and maybe even 10th or 15th time. But each of those lessons is very valuable. And, you know, success is built upon endless failures almost in some cases, or many, many, not endless maybe, but many failures, right? So take me, for example. I did my master's degree and I experienced two failures. First of all, I only applied for a single PhD program. That's true, because I was kind of cocky and overconfident and I was not accepted in it, which was considerable failure for me at that point in time. And also, after that, so I applied for PhD, didn't get accepted, graduated from my MA, started sending resumes. That's about 5 years ago, at the peak of the recession, around 2009. And I stopped counting after I sent maybe 200 resumes, but I kept sending them. So I probably sent something like 300 or 400 resumes. I had one interview, and after that process, I had not a single job offer. And what happened then was, well, basically, one of the applications that I sent was an application to a place called Singularity Hub, and they had an open call for staff writers, basically, or freelancing writers. And I thought, well, the Singularity is a cool concept. I actually did a lot of work research on it while I was writing my master's thesis. So I thought, I know the topic. I'm also an okay writer. So I thought I'd be perfect for the job. But they never, ever bothered to respond even to me. After waiting for a week or two, then it finally occurred to me that I'm not getting a call back, despite the fact that I thought I'd be perfect for the job. But a couple of days later, it occurred to me, well, look, maybe I don't actually need those guys. Maybe I can actually do that on my own. Maybe, just maybe, I can actually start and do that entire thing entirely on my own. And of course, I had a number of fears. So first of all, I had no technical knowledge whatsoever. I mean, I have an education in political science, philosophy, and economics. So I knew nothing about HTML, nothing about computers, nothing about web design, nothing about blogging, nothing about anything relevant or helpful in that manner. So I had to start from the ground up. But technology has gotten so ahead of its time. And now, mind you, that was 5 years ago. Now it's even easier than ever before. That you can start with an online business for $100 or a couple hundred dollars at the most. And I think I started with something between $50 and $100. So failure is not very costly. As far as the knowledge and skills that you need to do that, you can actually acquire them for free online nowadays. You can learn everywhere. And this is what I did. And so I started with a failure in multiple levels. I ended up, because of that failure, discovering kind of like my mission in life, if you will. I actually love what I do every day. And I get hundreds of emails of people telling me how I've made a difference for their life. So the moral of the story for me here is that, number one is we have to embrace failure. Secondly, we have to embrace fear. Not only did I fail, but as I said, I was very fearful that I didn't possess any of the knowledge of the skills. When I started actually podcasting, or before starting podcasting, I was very afraid that, you know, I have a very strong Bulgarian accent, so I was worried, who in the world is going to listen to me if even my English doesn't sound right? How do you start a podcast if you don't sound right? Right? So I had a serious fear, because I thought, well, people would just not even bother listening. They'll just hear the first couple of sentences that I utter and they'll be like, oh, this guy doesn't even speak properly, so forget about it. But despite all those worries that I had and the fears and failures and stuff, basically, as Gary Vaynerchuk says, you figure out what you want to do and you beat it to death until it actually, you knocked you down in the end. So as long as you're motivated to persist and build upon those failures, then you can get it right eventually, and that's how you start making a difference and start making progress. And when you do that long enough, you know, it takes many years to have an overnight success, but it's possible.
So what kind of future do you think you would like to see with all these technologies and with people kind of waking up, becoming more focused on self-improvement and independence, and potentially people learning how to communicate their ideas and getting funding for things that matters?
The future is not some place that we're going to. The future is something that we are creating. The future that I see is one of our own creation. And so the paths to it are not to be found or discovered. The paths to it are to be made. The future is to be created. That's the kind of future I see. And so that's why, to me, it's an open question. Are we going to create a great world and a great future that we all get inspired by or not? Either way, it's up to us. So that's the future I see. It's not the future that happens to us, but it's the future that we create.
I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast. All right. Thank you so much for being on the show. It was really, really great to have you.
My pleasure, guys. I'm very happy to have had this conversation with you today. I enjoyed it very much.
All right, guys, that's it for the show. Thanks for listening. If you want to check out anything that we mentioned in the show, we always have tons of links and information on our show notes at futurethinkers.org/episode10.
And if you like the show, don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.